Everybody to the Anima Social Impact Summit. And if you're watching this as your first video, our first interview, I'd like to welcome Nick Bolton, the founder and CEO of Animus, and to get a real sense of why he chose the summit, the idea of coaching beyond the client, and get some sense of his gains and ideas that he's sort of found from the interviews that he's done. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Nick into the space. Hey, Nick.
Thank you, Rob. Very good to be here and excited by the summit that's about to unfold in front of us.
So Nick, what was it that brought you to the idea of having the summit in the first place?
Well, you know what? So much of what I do, Rob, starts off as stupidity, actually, now I think about it. And honestly, like, I bought this piece of software called Hey Summit, and I thought to myself, what could I do with this piece of software to test it out? It was as silly as that. And then I thought, well, we should run a summit, but what do we care about? What's interesting to us? And so that's when it started to get serious, because I was like, you know what? We hear a lot about social impact that's happening within our community, and we've tried it ourselves. Like, you and I tried it multiple times, right from back in 2009, 2010, with London Early Years Foundation and then Coach for Carers. And, you know, we've always tried to do these things, but we've never made it sustainable. You know, we've never kind of created a project that's become an ongoing thing for us. But then as you start to kind of keep your ear to the, the grapevine and grapevine, I was like, there are people in our community who are doing this. And I wonder what they're doing. Because you hear of, you know, David Frost helping, you know, doing stuff with Age UK, or you hear about Macmillan Cancer Trust, and you're like, what is it they're doing? How are they doing it? How do they make it stick? What are the lessons? What did they struggle with? What can we learn from that? And how do we get more people doing that? So from a very silly origin of, I've got this software, how do I test it? It became this could be really, really fascinating. You know, this could be a great way to understand what's happening in our community, but also for us as an organization to go, these are the lessons that seem to be the ones that stick and that we need to be taking. So that was kind of the genesis of it. And it's been, you know, it's been a really, really interesting journey, I think, for both you and I to start interviewing these guys and find out what works and what doesn't and where do they struggle. I think it's been fascinating.
Yeah, I'd agree there that there's so much to learn as you begin to have the conversations around what people are doing and how they're doing that, and what is also what they're trying to achieve. And I guess part of the question here is, you know, what is it that you're or we're trying to achieve with the summit? Because there's a few things around, you know, learning how to do social impact, but is there anything bigger in that you're looking to achieve?
I think, you know, when I started the summit, once I got serious about what the summit was, there were really three major kind of planks, and there's become a fourth plank, but the three major planks were, first of all, this happened in April, and we all know what's going on in April. We're all in lockdown. I was locked down on my boat in a place called Berkhamsted, and 10 weeks on a 6-foot wide boat, you've got to find something useful to do with your brain. So I was aware that, and I was doing it, as you remember, I was doing the lockdown surgeries where I was supporting our coaches with their business thinking. But I started to recognize that, well, there's lots of coaches out there doing great work. Why don't we celebrate what's been done? And I think, you know, I first, in terms of why social impact, I got triggered by, triggered in a good sense, by the work of Jen Choi and Beatrice Ornick around the support haven. And I thought to myself, we should be celebrating this, but who else can we celebrate? So the number one plank was, let's celebrate something. Let's stop kind of like only thinking of what's difficult at the moment, and only thinking about how are we stuck, and only thinking about what's our problem, and think about actually how are people making a difference. So that was the first plank. The second plank was really about, well, if we're going to do that, how can we draw from them? Not just like, woohoo, well done you, but what did you have to go through? What did you have to figure out? What were the barriers? How did you manage funding, if funding was an issue for you? How did you manage people? How did you manage the complexity of vulnerability in a coaching space? What are the lessons? So the second plank was really for me as a business owner of Animas to say, what are the lessons we would need to learn if we were going to build on this? And the third one was really about, how do we inspire more people to do it? Like, the reason I would love people to watch this is not so they say, oh, well done, Animas, what an amazing community. Or well done, this particular coach, what an amazing coach. But rather, oh, what could I do? You know, what's my part in this? And if we can inspire another 14 coaches from, you know, to replicate what's been done through this summit, wow, what a difference that would make. So those were the first three planks that were the sort of the cause of why I'm doing it. The fourth plank has actually become that it's completely committed me to social impact as a company and as an organization, and hence where we're heading with recruiting somebody for that role. I don't think that would have happened had it not been for putting this summit together. Like, I know you and I have played with the idea of social impact multiple times within Animas, and we even recruited somebody 2 years ago, but I think it took this process and realizing, wow, this stuff is really possible and it's really great, you know, like the power of it is huge. Okay, so what if I commit to that as a serious part of our business? So that's kind of like the fourth plank that came as a result of all of this.
I you know, really like that fourth plank, and as you say, we've kind of played around with the idea of it for a while, but as we've gone through these interviews and those learnings and those understandings, it's really allowed us to go there. You know, we always knew it made a difference, but it solidifies the difference that it's making. Yeah. And when you talk about inspiring people to do more, I know that with some of the interviews that I've had and the conversations that we've had about your interviews, how you find out that there's just this germ of an idea that somebody has, and all of a sudden it turns into this huge project. So it's like, you know, it's possible. It's about, you know, how do you connect, and the interviews kind of explore with people the various blueprints that you can pull together to sort of to make this happen, as well as that learning journey that you need to go on, that sort of the challenges that you have to face when you create this sort of thing.
Totally. I mean, we'll talk about this later with what comes next, but part of what I'm realizing is that what we need is a community of social impact, because this is all happening in isolation. You know, all these guys have figured it out by themselves or as part of a tight-knit group that's focused on the same project. But actually, like, well, hold on, where are the connections between all of these people? How do we build capacity amongst them, not just within their own project? And so that's, you know, for me, that's a big part of the future.
And some of the conversations I had with people like Jem talking about how they support others that are creating social impact. And I think that's very much part of what we want to do and how we want to work as we sort of move forward is pulling people together, supporting people, but also creating our own social impact initiatives as we sort of move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the dream. And I think it's, the great thing is it's a dream that's very realizable. Do you know what I mean? Like, some dreams are just like, oh, I want to do this. And you go like, yeah, but how? You know, what does that mean? Whereas I feel like this is, it's feeling very, very tangible to me about both connecting people who are doing it so that we become a kind of a platform for multiplying their efforts, but also having our own unique things that we work on. I think that feels very realistic and definitely something we're going to be doing.
And you spoke before about the idea of, you know, coaching beyond the client, and I guess that kind of alludes to the idea of social impact. So just want to get your sort of take and sense of what that means for you.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I have a bit of a reaction, as you know, I think, to the idea that coaching becomes an advocacy sort of profession where we advocate for particular values we all cohere around. I don't really agree with that stance. I don't think that's the right thing. It's fundamentally not what coaching is, but I think what coaching can be is an intervention that is part of that, where that's the right thing. So what I mean by coaching beyond the individuals that, or beyond the person, is that when you and I came into the coaching role back in the noughties, it was really focused on the individual, and it was focused on the individual making changes in their life, and that was fundamentally it. And then slowly over time there was a shift in how people perceived coaching as being only about what's the individual impact, and they started to think more in terms of, well, how does that person relate to their ecology? I don't know if you remember this phrase, there was a lot of talk around ecological coaching, which is, what's the ecology of that person? What are the ramifications for the change they make on their family, on their community, etc.? So there was a sort of a philosophical move that meant that coaching was being seen as systemic, which was that it doesn't sit in isolation. When you make a change with somebody, or that person makes a change, it has ripple effects. And, you know, we're all used to this idea of the ripple effect. But in a way, it never quite got traction at an operational level. There was nobody saying, or not many, let's say, who are going, hold on, coaching can be deliberately used as an intervention in a system where you can multiply the effects beyond the individual. Now, the individual is still has a kind of a sanctity within the coaching relationship, but that individual is a part of something bigger, whether that's an organization, whether it's a part of a charity, whether it's part of a community. The coaching has been deliberately brought to a kind of place where an individual is a kind of something. So it becomes much bigger than that individual. The individual represents something, whether that's an elderly person, a young person, a disabled person, a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, you know, who are trying to do that. Becomes the sort of the context in which coaching takes place. And so whilst the coaching is always really focused on the individual, even if you're doing group coaching, it's still about who, you know, what's the individual thinking from the group. Nonetheless, you're bringing to it an aim of making a wider systemic change in some way.
I love the idea that, you know, we talk about the ecology or the system or the systemicness of social impact. And I don't know if you want to talk a little bit more around this idea of these systemic changes that we go about making, or the idea of how the individual can work with that whole system to create change.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. The systemic movement is getting very big at the moment. And honestly, I have a few worries that it's becoming too proselytizing its concepts, and it's sort of trying to reshape the profession rather than allow the profession to be part of it, if that makes sense. But broadly speaking, it's this idea of nested systems, that we're part of something bigger than ourselves, and that part of something bigger than ourselves is also part of something bigger than itself, and on until, in a sense, you get to like life or universe or whatever it might be, you know. But you have an individual, and that individual, depending on which direction you go, that individual is part of a family, and that family is part of a community, and that community is part of a nation, and that nation is part of a world, and that world is part of the universe. You know, that's one direction. Another might be that that person is part of an organization or a team, let's say team, and that team is part of a department, and that department is part of an organization, and that part of organization is part of an industry, and that industry is part of a profession, and so on. So depending on the kind of the route you go. So then the question for me is, if you're thinking, how do I coach systemically, then you're much more aware of where do you fit in those nested systems. Are you coaching at the organizational level to have systemic change that drills downwards and upwards? Or are you coaching at the individual level, but recognizing the impact of the system on that individual? Because I think, you know, one of the things about coaching, which is can be a little bit limiting, is it has certain beliefs, you know, certain assumptions about how change happens and how human beings function, which until recently has been very Tony Robbins-esque. Namely, that the individual is utterly autonomous and can make choices, and what's your excuse, get on and do it. But the truth is, if you see a human being as part of a biological system and an organizational system, social structures, there are forces on that individual which mean it's not always easy to change, or not always easy to be fully responsible for something. And I think systemic coaching is great, and then it starts to recognize those forces that are pushing inwards but also pushing outwards. And then as a coach, you're going, well, where do I sit in that, and how do I work with it so that I am conscious of that system and either working with it deliberately to create change, or at least, if that's not your job, because it might not be the contract, at least aware of that system. So you can be a little bit more fluid and flexible around how that human being can change within their context. That's what it means to me.
And one of the things I think is going to be really interesting for people as they watch the series of interviews is to kind of see that in action, where you can hear people talking about the different layers or levels that they're working at in order to create that change. So you can kind of see a systemic view of social impact through attending the whole summit.
Absolutely. You know, two people that jumped to mind for me are Dee Corrigan, who's working with CEOs of FTSE 100 companies to change the nature of business. And then David Frost, who's working with the elderly, and they're both working systemically. They're just working at utterly different ends of that. Because when you look at David, one of his big outcomes was one of the first people he worked with hadn't been out of her home for 3 years. Well, that's because there's a systemic impact on her that meant she didn't feel able to leave her home, whether it was the nature of the support in the UK or whether it was the nature of her particular circumstances or whatever it was. There was stuff that was systemically meaning that she hadn't been able to leave her home in 3 years. And due to the coaching he did with her, she was able to leave her home. That's mind-blowingly huge for an individual. But then you've got Dee, who's working with FTSE 100 leaders who are going, how do we change the nature of business in terms of our purpose? And that has a completely different set of ramifications and outcomes, but they're both working within a system. And that's, you know, I think when you start to go, oh, that's interesting, where do I want to work? Then it becomes a fascinating choice rather than just a, here I am, what do I do next?
And I, as I sort of hear you talk about that, those considerations about the choice of where you work, it makes me ponder on this idea of, is there, you know, what's the nuance of coaching that you bring to social impact work? Because on one sense, you're aware that you want to create a change, and that could become a driver or a leader for the kinds of coaching that you're doing, but you're also coaching. So you're attempting not to lead and to work with what's being presented by the client themselves. And I'm just wondering, you know, when you think about that, is there anything you sort of go, yeah, but this is what's important there, or this is what jumps out there?
Yeah, it's a great question, because I suppose we're at the beginning of this journey, Rob, and it might be that, you know, we come to a very different conclusion in a year or 2 years than we have right now. So at one level, you might identify it as, well, okay, if we're saying it's coaching for social impact, then we need to be coaching for social impact. But what if this term coaching is not appropriate for that work? Like, we don't fully know. So one of the pieces of work we did, as you know, is the Coach of Carers work, and where we trained former palliative carers to coach current palliative carers. But the point was, they were former palliative carers. They weren't just coaching. They had an experience, a lived experience of losing someone they loved. And so the whole approach to coaching was somewhat different from the classic person-centered, only ask questions approach, because there was an assumed experience, almost like a sort of mentoring, but not mentoring, because they weren't teaching them either. But there was something different about the quality of that work that was predicated on the idea that we have been in the same boat. Now, that's not always the case with coaching. So I think there's something about saying, well, as we get better and better at understanding social impact coaching, does the word coaching have to shift for that field? Is there more of a sort of a, I joked to one of our current interviewees only yesterday about calling it like being a coach tour or a menoach. You know, is there some combination that we need to begin to create that says that when I do social impact work, I don't just become a person-centered, you know, dispassionate coach, I become something else. And even, is there a different level of accreditation required for this field? And we just don't know. Like, you know, we were talking recently about the fact that the ICF require 80% of your coaching to be paid. Well, if you dedicate yourself to social impact coaching, that's essentially saying your coaching doesn't count. Now, I know that the ICF wouldn't actually mean that or say that, but it is one of the potential perverse outcomes of a system that's predicated on a commercial relationship. What if that could be broken? Does the ICF need to change? Or do we need to create something that reflects that change? All of this is open for me. It feels like, wow, Animas is going to take this somewhere really, really special, and we don't know where it's going to go. We do know that there are certain assumptions that the coaching field make that make it very useful for social impact. And those are, change is possible. We don't go in just going, yeah, it's tough, isn't it? Like, poor you. We're going and going like, somewhere in somehow a shift can happen. And that's like a core belief of coaching, which I believe is going to be intrinsic to social impact coaching versus social impact something else. Number two is, we go in with an overall sense of unknowing. And as much as we are not going in, they're going, here's the answer. And one of the interesting, you know, conversations I had with Dee Corrigan around the FTSE work, the one was, because she talks about a provocation. We go in with a provocation. And I was like, it's an interesting, because the provocation assumes a certain way of thinking. How do you reconcile that with coaching? Now, if you want to know the answer, watch her interview. But it was, you know, for me, it's an interesting dilemma. Is at what point does something become advocacy versus coaching? Or is it that coaching underlies it in terms of the communication approach? Is it like, here's a provocation, what do you think of it? You know, and then you're into a sort of a coaching world of exploration rather than this is how to do it. Instead of being pedagogical, you're into an approach which is very much, you know, fluid and collaborative. So I think the not knowing thing is really critical. A third one, which is really, really obvious, is dialogue. You know, coaching is absolutely predicated on dialogue. And you know, all of the stuff we talk about when it's social impact is going to be dialogic in some sense. Someone somewhere is going into a system and having a conversation with someone. And it's a particular kind of conversation that you might call coaching or coach-touring or whatever it's, you know, whatever that thing is. And so I think that's critical. And I guess the fourth one is the idea that fundamentally coaching is about creating change both externally and internally. On the whole, coaching isn't about, hey, that's what it is, deal with it, reconcile yourself to it, you know, almost like a sort of a mindful dispassionate acceptance. It's, well, yeah, you can change the way you think about it, but also how could you change the outside of it? Like that the old lady that David worked with, she could have gone, yep, I'm reconciled to being indoors for the rest of my life. But instead, David helped to go, well, yeah, that's one way. But is there another way that means you're not doing that? So I think for me, those are the sort of the four things that underlie. There's lots of techniques and technical stuff around coaching. But if I look at the principles, it's those things. Dialogue, it's unknowing, it's change, and it's belief and possibility.
Yeah, I so agree with that and hear that and wonder what that thing will be that underpins it when it starts to explore social impact or social change, because there are other qualities that are brought into that space. There is that mentorship that exists or training, and it's like they sort of wrap around the coaching to enable the work to take place, because sometimes the social impact, the work of the coach, is just to create the project and not actually do any work in the project itself. So there's also the sort of the facilitation piece that sits with this as well.
Yeah, 100%. You know, one of the conversations I've been having with people recently around social impact within Animas is it just coaching? But at the same time, what is the shared DNA that you could at least go, it's recognizably coming from the same field? It's not that we're suddenly going to start, you know, hiring vans and taking ready-made meals to places. There's got to be something that's recognizably coming from the same place, which is dialogue, change, possibility, unknowing. And that can happen in training, facilitation, you know, creating the actual process that delivers that. If you want to be an organizer, in the way David Frost is doing so well with Age UK, is like how he's now recruiting 9 regional managers through lottery funding. So although he started with a coaching approach, he's now becoming more of a systems builder. But it's all coming and delivering the same essential kind of quality.
As we talk about this, I start to wonder what a program around this would look like, to sort of where people go, I want to do this, and bringing them together to look at what are all those different levels, what is that system, how might you approach it, so people can really get their head around it, and perhaps just watching the summit will allow that to begin to unfold for people.
Yeah, I really, really hope it does. And at the same time, I'm very, very conscious that that's what we're going to very deliberately do over the coming months and years with our new social impact manager. Is not just be like, hey, how does Animas do it? But rather, how do we create the educative process for anyone who wants to do it? You know, how do you learn from each other? I think that's going to be huge.
Yeah, the learning from each other, for me, really stands out when you look at how communities evolve and what they then go on to do. And I think... You know, having Animas as a community will allow us to really tap into that and leap from that as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. And for me, it's been really interesting during the interviews, because I realized how often they do sit in isolation. You know, each of these guys they're plowing their field in different ways, but they don't know about each other. Or if they do, it's very tangential. And it's like, how can we be much more deliberate about that connecting process? And how do we pull other people into that? I think that's massive.
And you talk about David and Julie and Dee. Is there anybody else or anything else that you sort of found really inspiring or kind of thought-provoking from the interviews that you did?
Oh, I mean, every single one. I say that in a very deliberate sense. The only problem is I've done quite a few, so you kind of like you sort of forget every single individual you spoke to in terms of the learnings. But if I think of Maha Alusi, and the fascinating work she's doing around asylum seekers and refugees in Germany, and recognizing, so hers is the sport of dialogue. And it was recognizing that simply doing translation work wasn't sufficient, because the cultural dimensions behind communication were so much stronger than the actual translation of words. And her kind of thing was, you guys might be translating Syrian into German and vice versa, but you're not translating the underlying cultural meaning that been given to those words. And how do we bring you together at a human level, not just a word level? And you know, I find that fascinating, and her vision is just mind-blowingly big. You just realize that each of these people is bringing something so special to the work they're doing. You know, whether you talk about Mia, who's part of the Macmillan Cancer work, and the impact that has at a very visceral level for somebody who's going through the process of cancer. So I think everybody has inspired me in different ways, for sure.
And is there we've spoken about our learnings as we've kind of gone through this conversation. I wonder if there's something where you go, this was a learning for me, as opposed to a learning for the system or what we might do as an individual. This clicked something for me.
I think the main thing for me was the support needed that when somebody steps up, to use a cliche, steps up to the plate. Do you know what I mean? One of the questions I ask a lot in my interviews was, why you? What happened for you that meant you were the one that stepped up and said, I think I should be doing something here? And that's a really fundamental question, because anybody can recognize that the elderly suffer in different ways within the UK or no doubt beyond. Anyone can recognize that people with cancer are struggling. Anyone can recognize, but there's something about somebody that says, right, yeah, and I'm going to do something about it. So then it's about, I think the lesson that came from me is, how do we as a company support them? How do we enable that to happen so they don't feel alone, having to reinvent the wheel every single time? That was the biggest lesson for me, was the fact that it takes a lot of courage for these guys to step up and a lot of commitment. I mean, a lot of commitment. I mean, one of my other questions was, how do you balance this work you're doing with the rest of your life?
Yeah, yeah.
The stuff that makes you money. And that was a fascinating conversation for me most, you know, a lot of the time, because you're just like, these guys are so committed. But that's all very well. If you haven't got the sustaining kind of platform, then it's at some point it's going to, unless you've got the wherewithal to put together a really deeply connected system of support, at some point it's going to fall away. And that feels like a real tragedy, is probably too strong a word, but you know what I mean? It feels like such a loss that this potentially huge project kind of collapsed for some reason.
Yeah, well, some of the conversations I had, we talked about that, you know, sustaining your energy through this and what's necessary to make that happen, and the communities or the support that you need to pull in. And I think part of what we'll do is look at what that support is and what that those communities might be to enable that to happen. And I guess a question as we sort of come towards the end of this conversation is, you know, what next around this? I know we've got somebody joining the team to sort of really focus our work around this. I just wonder, is there a vision for you around what that might be?
The vision is getting clearer and it's getting bigger all the time. I mean, it's fascinating just going through the interview process for people who are interested in the role, and everybody brought different ideas and different, you know, visions of what this might be. And it's kind of inspired me to go, wow, I thought it was like, initially, if I'm really, really honest, I thought, here's a bunch of coaches called Animites. And here's a bunch of people who might need coaching. How do we connect them? And it wasn't going to be as simple as like a directory or something like that where you just make it random. I had ideas of projects, but it was still going to be, here's 3,000 people and growing, and here's people, how do we connect them? But now the more I think about it, the more I realize it can be so much bigger than that. It can be, you know, research sort of institute in a sense around, how does this work? What is the best practice? And how do we enable other people to do the same? It can be training in what does social impact coaching mean. It can be moving away just from coaching and thinking about training skills, facilitation skills, you know, whatever it might be to create dialogue. So all the time, the vision keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, whether it's going to be a social enterprise, you know, it's really, really open, Rob, but it's definitely huge. And I'm really excited about what it's going to bring. And I think having one person whose sole job it is to kind of be a micro CEO for this arm and then build it into something significant is going to be really, you know, really revolutionary for us.
Yeah, this is a really exciting space to be in and an exciting time to be doing it. And, you know, it's brilliant that we've had the opportunity to have so many of these conversations to kind of light that fire underneath this role and to kind of go, right, this is what it could be, whilst recognizing there's so much scope for growth around this and so much more possibility of what it could be than our sort of limited thinking or ideas or desire for it, which is just hugely exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. There's one other thing, final thing I'd like to say, if you don't mind, Rob, which is, you asked about the sort of lessons, and I think one of the lessons that I not took for this for myself, but the one that I heard over and over again, was this idea of, you've got to be the person. And I suppose as you know, viewers of this summit or attendees of this summit watch the videos, I'd love for them to be thinking, like, who do I need to be the person for? If they want to do something, you know, they might not, and that's fine. But like, if they're watching this, I'm guessing there's some energy around social impact. So the thing that struck me was, each person that I interviewed decided to be the person. And that for me is like the critical thing. Who do you want to be the person for, or what for? And that would be like the underlying question that I think should guide people as they go through these interviews.
I think that's a brilliant question. I think that's a lovely place for us to end our conversation, with people taking that question away with them as they enter into the summit and the other interviews.
Brilliant. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you for taking the time to share your thoughts, your vision, your ideas with us. And I look forward to many more of these conversations.